just allowance to let me fail and screw up and learn the thing. And anytime I spoke up and said, hey, I'd love to try this, or do you need help there? I see this thing. They'd say, put a plan together and let's get it. You know what I mean? They gave me the opportunities to really get beyond just what I was really headed down, was just like a pure sales kind of role. I really enjoyed it. But there, the, you know, Altec Capital allowed me to kind of stretch those leadership kind of muscles. And it really was, again, it's another pivotal moment, my time there. I thought that I would retire.
Today, we're talking to a guy named Austin Bennett. Now, I've known Austin for a while and met him at a friend's house watching, I think, the Super Bowl one night. And so we got to talking about business and different things like that. And so after doing a little research, he's had a really, really good, fun journey. Started out in a situation in high school that a lot of people don't recover from. And then we talk about how he works in finance, and then he did this, and then he made the leap and started his own business, a business called Battle Horse. And so we're going to talk to Austin Bennett today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Man, thank you. Yeah, yes, appreciate it. And listen, I'm a fan of the show.
So awesome.
First and foremost.
Catching
up with you actually before we started, it's like you have got so much going on, and the fact that you take time to do this and put out good content, man, I'm appreciative. So.
I love doing it for sure. And I told somebody yesterday, monetarily, I lose money every month of doing this.
Yeah, right.
I do. But the relationships that we've made through sitting and doing this for hour and a half, whatever, mm-hmm. are priceless.
Yeah.
You know, getting to know David Oakley and his relationship, and then going deeper into Scott Olson's life, who was the three or four episodes ago. And it's fascinating.
He's awesome.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
And then at like Ashley Mack, the girl that owns five different restaurants here in Birmingham, who's our age and is just absolutely killing it. So understanding and hearing those stories about how, like, your family, I want to get into your family, but like her, for example, she's had fertility problems, and then they have two foster kids.
Oh, wow.
And like, just that story.
Yeah, right.
How
they navigate
exactly,
to get there and the whole
thing.
Went
through that and owning and killing business.
So
the first question I have is tell me about your family.
Okay. You want to start like extended and then work to the family today or today?
In your home. Let's talk about the immediate family.
Yeah. So my amazing wife, Lauren, I know we'll talk more about that later. We're middle school sweethearts. So she's been my best friend. She's been my best friend for the way better part of my life at this point. We've been married 26 years and we've got four kids. It's funny. I'm in this new season where our kids are getting married. Our oldest daughter has gotten married. So I don't know if I'm supposed to say I've got four kids, a son-in-law and a grandbaby,
that's
you know,
because right.
Exactly. They're not in our home.
They're
But they're 10 minutes from our house and really, really close to us. So Lauren and I have been married 26 years. Our oldest daughter is 28, married. They've got their first little baby, almost a year old. And then second in line is a son, Colby. He's at Auburn.
Okay.
21, graduates in December.
Man, oh, man.
Oh, buddy. Callie, third in line.
No Callie.
Yeah, Callie's at Sanford, freshman there. And then Cade, we call him Caterade. It's just like me, him, and mom at the house, which we're all getting adjusted to that. You know what I mean? He's 15.
To Homewood, right?
He actually goes to Church of Brook Hills Co-op. So
really?
Yeah, so we're in River Chase, so we're zoned for Spain Park. And so Colby graduated from Spain Park. So we love Hoover City Schools and the system there. It was really kind of post-COVID and Cade's kind of learning style specifically. We started researching a little bit other setups for education. And had some friends that kids went to Church of Brook Hills Co-op.
Yep.
So they go to class on Tuesday and Thursday, and it's really home study, although they're interacting with the teachers Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we did that. This is his third year, and I think he'll, you know, see it through probably to graduation.
So we did the homeschool thing for 3 years. We redshirted our kids, John in sixth grade, Tegan in third grade, and that's a whole other story. But we did the homeschool thing for a while. How did your wife how does she do with the homeschooling?
Yeah, so it's this is who Lauren is, right? Lauren, I always say she manages a circus. She works a whole lot harder than I do.
Yeah.
trying to bring it all together. And she's getting even better at delegation. So I think that was the thing. She did not want to be a teacher, so to speak. So she didn't want to run the full-blown homeschool. I'm going to be the teacher.
Right.
So it's one of the reasons we lean towards co-op, where they actually interact with teachers and have those lessons. But then she's got tutors that come to the house for extra study Monday and Wednesday. Like she organizes it all, you know, really, really well.
Yeah.
And again, we're seeing the fruit of it. I mean, Callie graduated from Church of Brook Hills, which was unexpected. I mean, we didn't think that's what her path would be, and ended up at Samford, and she's doing great. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me about sports with the homeschooling. What do you guys do there? Does he play sports?
Well, he's at that fun age of 15, mm-hmm. so we're still kind of figuring some stuff out. He's played all the sports. I mean, we've got a couple of athletes in the in the kids. He's certainly one of them. Did flag football, basketball, sure. soccer. I mean, did them all, growing up. Started lacrosse a couple years ago. Tried that for a season. I don't know if that's going to stick. He's still kind of figuring that out. So really, man, he's playing golf for the most part.
Lifetime sport.
Yep, and he's loving that. But he's getting into music and mm-hmm. guitar and creative, and so he's really leaning in, so we're trying to support all
as
that.
As long as – I think is we like to have our kids in team sport if we can, and our kids are still involved in team sports. But as long as they've got an outlet outside of school, outside of church.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Like something to do that takes up their time that's in a positive way.
Yep.
So that's good. Okay, so you're a small part of the population that had a child in high school.
Yeah, that's right.
And then now you're happily married, been married for 26 years. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how that obvious, and I don't want to say this in a negative, but how that bump in the road helped shape your marriage and your family life.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at kind of God's hand on your life and how he was navigating you potentially before you were following him very closely. Sure. And that's definitely my story. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to Lauren and I. I mean, it was, we kind of think of it and or we say it as like, I mean, obviously it was unplanned, but it was never unwanted. And it was a thing that kept Lauren and I together. We ended up getting married after our freshman year of college. So I went to UAB my first year. We got married that summer, and then we moved to Tuscaloosa and went to Alabama.
That's right,
the Bennetts. You know what I mean? moved down and had a little house.
Yeah.
So anyways, man, I look back and leading up to that moment, I would say more than anything, I was lost. I was like trying to grasp at, things to feel at peace. I really wasn't focused or certainly not very determined.
Sure.
But when Lauren got pregnant and Caden was coming, it's like it just flipped a switch inside of me. And I started getting really serious about school.
Put your big wood
pants on? Yeah, man. We made the decision that, hey, we're going to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
And it was definitely just a complete, pivotal moment. In my life, so
in a positive way.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And again, man, married, being a granddad, I've heard it's like it's the reward for not murdering your own kids.
That's
or
right.
Whatever. Like it is. Like I'm obsessed with my granddaughter.
That's
seeing
awesome.
Anybody get spoiled,
That's incredible.
Yeah. So.
So the hard, the weird part is when most kids have a child in high school, they immediately go to work. You felt like going to college was the best thing. And you guys, I mean, y'all packed up and moved to Tuscaloosa together, baby in tow.
Yeah, I mean.
I got to get my one-year-old. I can't go out tonight, guys.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's it. Well, it's actually cool. We had obviously, we both graduated from Hoover. We went mm-hmm. to Barry our freshman year. That Barry, became Hoover High School, So we had some friends that were like longtime high school friends. So we certainly got still a social experience. Obviously, no Greek life or any of that stuff. But yeah, man. I mean, it was like we got down there. It was where we needed to be and what we needed to do. And I think whenever I tell the story about Caden, and folks are always interested and they want to hear, how'd that work out and what was going on. I mean, again, Lauren is an incredible woman, and she's always just been such this hard worker. She's super determined. She's a perseverer. So, give her a ton of credit for the. But I think Lauren, if Lauren was sitting here, we would both tell you, man, our parents and our family and the support system that stepped in to just take a what could be, a hard situation and make it not easy, but a whole lot easier and set us up for success. I mean, that both her parents and my parents leaned in, and it was just like a collective. This is not going to end badly. Like we're gonna set these guys up for success. As long as they'll put the work in and do what they need to do. And so, man, a lot of credit goes to them.
Now in college, so I had this kid the other day. He's a boyfriend of a niece, and I was like, so what are you going to do when you get to college? He goes, I'm gonna go to class. I go, well, are you gonna play sport? No, no, sir. Are you gonna get a job? No, I'm like, I said, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm going to study. I said, no, dude, you're going to go to school for about 3 or 4 hours a day. And then if you study 2 or 3 hours a day, that's a lot.
Yeah.
What are you going to do the other 12? So when you were in college, married with a baby. Yep. Did you go to school and work? Tell me what you did there.
Yeah, I mean, when we got to Tuscaloosa, mm-hmm. I was really all in with school. My when I was here in UAB, I had a job.
Yeah.
I was a runner at my stepdad's law firm. Uh-huh. So I worked there and went to school at UAB. Mm-hmm. When we went to T-Town again, just a testament to my parents, you know, it was one of those moments where, like, my stepdad, who's really the man that kind of raised me for the most part.
Yeah.
They have those, like, really direct conversations with you that land. And he kind of looked at me and he said, "Hey, you know, we're going to set you up for success, but I'm going to expect you to be successful. And if, you know, things can change quickly if you're not." So, and I took that as like,
wow,
you know, I'm going to figure this out. We're going to work out a budget and we're going to figure out all the things we need to do. Lauren worked part time.
Yeah.
But did I'm going to graduate. She did. Yeah. So we were both at Alabama.
So both of you in school.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And man, I'm telling you, it's like, I know on the resume it sounds like a heavy thing. I mean, I would tell you our season in college, you know, newly married with Caden down in Tuscaloosa, it's probably the most fun that we've had, you know, as a couple. I mean, it was a lot of grind and a lot of focus.
You don't know any better. It's
exactly. I mean, you're just doing what you can do.
Figuring it out every day. Whereas, like, we have a plan.
Right.
And we, you know, we screw the plan up and it's just like, you know, our mind explodes. But, like, it's just like, oh, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It really was. Yeah. It was all fine.
That's right.
So I'm going to go back a little bit. When you were a kid and someone said, "Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up, Austin?" What did you say?
Yeah, it's funny, man. I said a scientist forever. I thought I would be like in a lab creating and problem solving and figure things out.
I have never heard that answer.
No, it's still, well, I'm just, yeah, man, I'm going to be, awesome. I'm going to be transparent.
That's it. I love
that. That was my answer.
Yeah.
I think probably somewhere in high school, I started kind of noticing the businessmen, you know what I mean? And decided I kind of maybe had a pull towards business. Always was strongest in like math and science. And so when I went to Alabama, I was really just going without knowing that I would end up in finance. I just kind of went in general business until I figured out what the major was going to be. And listen, man, that the business that we have now, equipment finance, even when I graduated with a finance degree, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, so it's just interesting to me. You look at the steps you take in faith and kind of walk, you know, walk life out, how it navigates you to a place that, like, I wish I could say I was 12 and knew I wanted to own my own, you know, business and da-da-da. But it's just not the case, man. Just kind of thing just kind of worked its way out that way.
Why finance? Like, what, I mean, it sounds like I understand that, but why did you pick finance?
Yeah, so again, my stepdad, I called him one day. I was confused. Like, I'm in the business school. I need to declare a major. And I'm like, I'm on the flip phone. That's exactly right, man. I'm just like, hey,
what I pick?
Hey, I need help. You know, I mean, can you help me kind of make a decision here? And he really navigated me down, you know, again, doing what he does best, which is just kind of leaning in and just helping me, you know, trying to give wisdom. Mm. It kind of came down to finance and accounting. And he just said,
it's honestly six and one half dozen of.
And he just said, do you see yourself sitting behind a desk and kind of crunching numbers, or do you see yourself as clearly needing math to do what you do, but wanting to kind of be outside and potentially have a sales, you know, more of a relational job? And I was like, it's definitely relational.
Yeah. Like, not a desk guy.
I'm not a desk guy. And so that's, I mean, that's how I chose finance. And so I graduated with a finance degree from Alabama, went straight out of college. I moved to Jacksonville, Florida. Lauren and Kate and I moved to Jacksonville.
Yeah. Let's go, guys.
We're packing up.
We did it too.
Time to go.
We did. I love it.
So we went to Jacksonville and did a financial planning down there. So that was kind of my first finance job.
Okay. So let's, I want to pivot away from career.
Okay.
Because I tell people this all the time. So the quick story is we were in Atlanta and we got married. The plan was, my dad was over there. Atlanta's really close to Birmingham. All of her family, all of my family. We were going to be high school coaches and teachers and just roll from there. We get a call on the plane from our honeymoon. First person I talked to entering in the country was a guy that offered me a job at NC State.
Okay.
We moved 8 hours from Birmingham. And Austin, now we didn't have a kid. But it was the best thing for mm-hmm. us because there wasn't a mom that we could run to.
Yep.
There wasn't a best friend that you could, you know, it was us. Now, we worked our face off. Mm-hmm. I worked 95 hours a week, and she worked 60 or 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
But being away was incredible.
How long were y'all there?
2.5 years.
Okay.
2 years, excuse me, 2 years. And then we again moved to, 4 hours away to Tennessee.
Okay.
So we, the first 11 years of our life, our marriage, 10 years, no, 15 years, mm-hmm. first 15 years of our marriage, we were away. Now, we got to Cookeville and built some strong relationships, and they were like family.
Yeah.
But like the first kid, bro, we didn't have anybody around.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
And I tell people this all the time. One of the best things that can happen in a lot of ways is moving away with your wife.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't thought about it that way, but you're exactly right. I completely agree. I mean, that was the, even when we were in Tuscaloosa, we were kind of close enough to Birmingham, and my oldest daughter.
Bro, you could run home and eat lunch with your mama.
And come back. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And we did that. We came home a lot of weekends. And so, man, when we went to Jacksonville, it got real because we're just like, we've left. Oh, no, you can't run home. You're here. You know what I mean? And so there was certainly a lot of maturity in that and development for us.
Now, how long were you there?
Just right at a year.
You were a financial planner, took all the tests.
Yeah, Series 7, 63, whatever, 66. I can't remember all of insurance.
Why?
I think because I was graduating with a finance degree and I started to explore finance jobs, I always just respected my uncle that lives in Jacksonville so much. Like when we would get together for Thanksgiving, I just kind of loved being around him, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
I thought that we kind of
clicked,
a lot of juice. Yeah. And so when I started to explore, okay, what do you do with a finance degree? And Darby actually approached me and just said, hey, have you ever considered doing this? I'm like, I haven't, and he starts telling me about what he does. And
Darby.
Sorry, that's my uncle.
Uncle.
Yeah,
got
my
it.
Uncle, who's okay. His name Darby. When Darby kind of told me about what he did and how he did it, he really provides a service. He loves to help people. You can build a career with it, all of that. I'm like, man, that sounds great. So I'm all in. So when I moved down there, then you got to do all the fun stuff, right? Pass all these tests. And
they say the tests are hard.
Series 7 was it's been a long time. But it was a monster.
Did you keep any of that?
What do you mean?
Any of the life?
No. So unfortunately, the way it kind of works is you've got to have a sponsor company that you're on with. You can do 2 years without one, but if you get to the 2-year mark and you don't find one, then you basically everything lapses. And so, again, I want to be in equipment finance,
stuff. Yeah.
But like, I remember the day where I'm like, this is when it's all going away. Oh yeah,
all the work, all the thing. So you did it for a year. Tell me about that year being in, because like, the God's honest truth, and I probably haven't said this on here.
Yeah.
Is if I had to go back and do everything over again, I would probably be in finance.
Well, you can still get in it.
But I think that like that world, now obviously I had no clue, and the amount of things I've learned in the last even like 6 or 7 years is astronomical.
Yeah.
But like that world is like,
well, you're doing some of it now.
I do a lot of it now, exactly. But
if I
sit there and I go, if I could go back, because the financial people in my life are so valuable and I trust them.
Yeah.
And they're God-fearing, Jesus-loving people.
Yep.
And I sit there and I go, that guy. And it's like, these guys make a lot of money. And sometimes people associate lots of money with worldly things.
Yeah.
They do. Just our society.
Yep.
But those dudes are making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because they help people understand a topic that is a lot of times very intimidating and people just don't do. And I love those people. Yeah. And I know that, like, and I don't want to get super Jesus juke on anybody, but, like, there's a huge ministry portion and a help giving portion to that business.
Yeah.
And so why did you not like that? Or why did you get out of it, I guess is the best question.
I mean, it was just, I think after spending the year in Jacksonville, and we have our daughter. And so Lauren and I really we're doing the whole, like, where do we want to live? And where do we want to raise Kate? And we kind of made the decision. We thought Birmingham was the spot for us. Mm. And so a lot of the transition back to Birmingham was not to get out of doing the financial planning. It was just to kind of relocate the family. And Ended up at AmSouth Investment Services, what's now Regions. But
AmSouth. That's all my name. Birmingham people
come on,
out there.
Come on, somebody.
Come on. AmSouth and South Trust.
That's exactly. Come on. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. Yes. That was it. So
that's so good.
So I ended up, and what was cool was, and again, you kind of just see the Lord's hand on navigating your path. Man, I got hired real quick at AmSouth Investment Service. They paid to move us up here because I was already licensed and ready to roll. I mean, they didn't, you know, it's like.
So you were doing the same thing for AmSouth.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's in the same lane, you know, sure. they do more actual investment purchases, where I would say financial planning is kind of the full, you know, insurance and investments and do the whole thing. So it's a little bit different, but all my licenses were needed to do it. They carried over.
All right. So you move away. If you had to go back and do it differently, what would you do immediately post-college?
So the only thing that I kind of regret, if I could go back, that I would do different is, again, my stepdad, he really leaned in that I should stay and get my MBA. Like, I was graduating in 4 years, and he was like, I think you should spend one more year in Tuscaloosa and get your MBA. I think it could help you long-term. And, man, again, you got to think about our scenario, like, I really want to be the provider for my home,
make and some money.
You know, I want to go make some money. I got stuff I need to do. You know what I mean? So I did not take that advice, and again went right into the workforce and got licensed. And if I had it to do all over again, I would have stayed and got my MBA. And I mean, there's been every year I feel like I'm like, I need to take the night classes and, you know, get this thing done and go to night school.
Go cafeteria, take night school.
Come on.
I cannot tell you how many times I get asked, "Hey Thomas, what do I do with all this money?" It's a good problem to have. They say, I made some extra money. I got a bonus. Someone died. We sold our house. We got extra cash. We finally have an answer for you. So let me tell you about this thing called alternative investing. In a nutshell, it's very simple. In a nutshell, it's investing dollars outside of a bank product or the stock market. So what do? We take money. We take your money and we loan it out like a bank in an above average return, thanks to the speed that we have and the relationships we have. You get a secure, predictable growth without market ups and downs. So here's it. It's safe and secure. Every loan is a first lien loan, making your investment super protected. We only do business with people that we trust. We only work with experienced operators we personally know and trust. So here's what we do. I usually vet these people by investing my own money in a loan first and then bringing them into this fund. So what they do is they're only investing in flipping in high quality real estate. Alabama is an extremely stable, growing market and makes it a smart place to invest. So the other thing is it's consistent cash flow. Your money works for you and it can be super passive. This is a true example of just extreme passive income. Or if you don't need the money every month, you can compound it because we compound the dollars quarterly. Okay. An asset-backed investing, unlike stocks, your investment is secured by real property. So here's a question I get. What money can you use? Okay, so let's run down this list. Money already in the market, self-directed IRA funds, savings account, or money just sitting around doing nothing because it's going to make 2% and you're going to have to pay taxes on that, or money you get from a bonus at work. Okay, you need access to your funds. That's okay. We offer a 60-day return of capital if the emergency comes up. So here's what you have to do. Go to thomascox.co and hit the invest tab at the top. And we're happy to talk to you about how you can invest with alternative income fund. So you are in circles with very, very smart people all the time, very intelligent financially, you know, academically. Do you ever see a difference in the kids that have an MBA and the kids that don't?
Not really. Do you?
No.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't.
I think the things that ultimately lead to success in life are probably more intangible, sure, you know, than tangible. And so I think the it factor, but let's put it this way, someone with an it factor that's also got the highest level of education, you know, that combination is pretty dangerous, I think. So
I would love, the only way I would do an MBA would be if I could do it in a very unconventional way. Mm. And I got to pick the people.
What do you mean pick the people?
Pick the people that taught me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't want to go, like, this sounds awful, and I can say this at 44. Okay, I couldn't say this at 25. I don't want to go sit with somebody that hasn't done what I want to do.
Yeah, no, I it's actually interesting. I hadn't thought about it until we're having this conversation, but it's like, man, I'm big on advisors. I'm big on wise counsel, and I am talking to, you know, folks that are 10 or 15 years ahead of me, sure, and are doing the things now that I hope I can do one day. So I'm still, I guess I'm, at the end of the day, I'm still seeking education, and you know, you always got to be a constant learner. And whether that's through a degree or just through coaching and, you know, wise counsel.
Do you have a coach right now?
Yeah. So, Sean Lovejoy.
Yes. Why do I know that?
So he's a Church of the Highlands member. You've probably been around him. He's got, anyways, he's got a kind of a faith-based business coaching, business. He and I would say became friends maybe 2-3 years ago, kind of around each other at church. And he'd approached me one time before, and I'm real cautious when I dive into stuff like this. So I'd say he courted me for about a year. Really? But I recognize that I really wanted, you know, more than just the kind of, hey, do you mind if I get coffee with you and ask you questions kind of a meeting? I really wanted someone that's like, once a month, we're sitting down, evaluating the business, evaluating where you are as a leader, you know, going to identify changes. I'm going to hold you accountable, you know, and Sean and his group, they do a great job of that.
What's the number one way he's helped you?
I think, well, he teaches me stuff all the time. I think that he pushes me to have hard conversations, to really step into the areas of the business that that need to be changed. You know, I'm kind of one of those, I want to just slowly shift things to where where I want them to go. And he's just taught me,
rip the bandaid off,
get it done. Yeah. And he, again, and what I love about him is that I know I'm going to see him, you know, the next month. So he's going to say, did you do the thing? You know
did
what I mean?
You rip the bandaid off.
Right. So, which is fun.
I know a handful of people that do have coaches, and I know that, like, and then the good thing, I imagine you pay this guy, and like paying someone is extremely valuable because you're a business guy and you want to get your money's worth. Mm-hmm. You want to get your return on the investment.
100%. Yeah.
But him, does he ever teach you things like that are not unique to you? Meaning like, this is Battle Horse. You got a toxic employee. You need to get rid of them. Because all you've done the last 3 months, you know, Austin has complained about
just
Susie.
One person, yeah.
Does he ever teach you things like, hey, you need to do this. I don't even know what that would be.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I think Sean does. He listens for the why or the root of anything. So I normally come in with kind of a specific, hey, I'm dealing with this, I want to change that. And then he asks questions, and he really gets to kind of the root of it. So maybe it's not, you know, hard conversations is really coming from people pleasing. And if you want to be a leader, you can't be a people pleaser. You can't please everybody all the time. Wow. And so I would say he does a really great job of taking, because he doesn't really know equipment finance. He'd say that, right?
But he knows business,
and so he can, and he knows leadership, and so
Will
he can
be
come.
Somebody
in
good to have on this podcast.
100%. I mean, again, so I'm taking a step with him this year. He's coming into our office, and now going to start coaching, you know, my leadership team, and going to do some kind of day coaching for my entire team. I'm a believer. I'm a fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get his number, and
that's great.
Let's try to do that.
Love that.
So you leave financial planning in Jacksonville. You come up, move back to Birmingham, get closer to family, but also AmSouth.
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
So, again, I started with AmSouth Investment Services. I was on essentially like a phone bank deal, like folks called in that had investments with AmSouth or with AIS, and they needed to sell this, buy that, move this, shift that. I mean, they didn't really have, maybe the person that had brought them in had left the bank, and so they were just calling the 1-800 number.
You're the 1-800.
I'm the 1-800 number. It was a grind, man. I mean, again, I told you before, I don't want to be sitting at my desk all day, and I'm like
2 years
duct
later,
taped,
I'm
duct taped to my desk, you know? So I navigated that, and I really recognized that, again, I want to be out. And so, you know, again, you look at the path. If I never had gotten AmSouth Investment Services, I never would have gone to AmSouth Bank. So I ended up transitioning to the more conventional bank side of the business. So I was, you know, in a branch in Irondale. You know, they'll give you titles at the bank. So I was like a VP or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm one of the guys out in the floating desks, you know, in the middle of the deal. And it was there that I met, I mean, to this day, one of my closest friends, but a guy who left 6 months after I got to AmSouth and called me 6 months after that and said, hey man, I came to work at this place. It's awesome. They're hiring, you know, you probably want to give it a look. And that was Altec Capital. And that was my transition into equipment finance. And I've never looked back once I got there.
Okay, so Altec Capital, I thought this was Altec, like the people that have the trucks.
It is. Yeah, yeah. But the Steislinger family, you know, who's the founders, the founders of Altec, you know, now they've got a number of family companies. And so They're obviously, the core business is a manufacturer. They're manufacturing, you know, bucket trucks and digger derricks and utility equipment, 100%. Like, if you, it's funny, in the interview, they said to me, we're about to give you the Altec curse. You're going to look from now on, like, you've never noticed these trucks before, but you're going to start noticing them everywhere. And if you look on the boom, the vast majority say Altec. You know, that's the part that goes up and down.
Yeah.
They're a manufacturer, and they're
making
100%. They got eight plants across the country. You know, I mean, they're literally bending steel and putting on chassis and making
stuff
to spec. But
that's not who you went to work for. You went to work for that family, but not that part.
So if you think about in our world, it's called a captive finance company. So it's essentially like, okay, now I'm making these trucks, I'm building these trucks, and every time I go to a customer, you know, they're $200,000, let's say, and the customer's like, okay, well, you know, I can go get financing. And they're sending them to their bank, or, hey, you got to figure that out on your own, pay cash, whatever you want to do. And so just in the family of companies, the concept came up that, like, we should have our own finance company that basically does, you know, finance paper. And story for Altec Capital is they went and they hired a guy named Rob Stowers, who was my boss for a number of years. Great guy, a mentor, certainly for me over the years. His whole background was in equipment finance. He'd worked at, I think, PNC just prior to starting Altec Capital. But he came in, the Steislingers hired him in to launch this division, you know, of Altec Capital. And I wasn't like a single, like the first, like single digit employee. I wasn't in the first 10, but man, I was pretty new. I mean, at 13, 14, 15 kind of a thing. And it was the most fun. Like I spent 12 years with that group. Again, some of my closest friends are still there. And, that is really where I would say my career path completely shifted because of the way that they did it. And because of just the unique opportunity to be a young, hungry person in a company that's trying to grow and scale and build, and there's all this opportunity. And all the leadership books that I read now, and I look back, I didn't realize how good I had it with the leaders that I had at Altec Capital, even the two guys that are running it today. The opportunities they gave me, just allowance to let me fail and screw up and learn the thing. And anytime I spoke up and said, hey, I'd love to try this, or do you need help there? I see this thing. They'd say, put a plan together and let's get it. You know what I mean? They gave me the opportunities to really get beyond just what I was really headed down, was just like a pure sales kind of role. I really enjoyed it. But there, Altec Capital allowed me to kind of stretch those leadership kind of muscles. And it really was, it's another pivotal moment, my time there. I thought that I would retire.
Really?
Yeah, I am such a huge fan of Altec and Altec Capital.
How many employees in that division they have now?
I think at Altec Capital, they're a little over 100.
So you were probably 10 or 15?
Yeah, and at the when I left, I think it was like 60 or 65.
So they're still growing.
Not stopping, man.
So let's break down what they do. Uh-huh. Okay, so they have their manufacturing part, and if you're out there and you're anywhere close to the Southeast, you will see an Altec truck.
100%.
They're everywhere. I see them everywhere.
And yeah, I've just infected everybody with the curse. I've just infected everybody with the curse. You're going to see it all the time.
Everywhere
you go.
So there you go. You're going to see it everywhere.
There it is.
So we're building these trucks that we're, instead of sending people to financing, because listen, if you've listened to me at all, you know that I say that the number one business in the world is banking. It's banking.
Yep.
It's the changing of money. It's the loaning of money.
Yep.
It is. Yep. The largest building in Trustful is the bank. The largest building in New York City is the bank. Mm-hmm. So they, in essence, started their own bank.
In the sense that a bank has cash that people need and they charge a rate to use that cash, yes. But the model really, and this is just kind of the fun of what we get to do, you know, in equipment finance, you've got the asset. Everybody understands, like,
the truck.
That truck is worth, again, let's just say 200 grand,
yeah.
Right? What when you do a contract, so let's say that truck is now going to be 60 payments of whatever to get you to the rate that you've decided you're going to, you know, you're okay with. The contract now has its own value. Like, that payment stream of 60 payments has a value. And
because it's agreed, let's just use 5%.
It's an agreed upon 5% return.
$200,000.
Yep.
Financed over 5 years at 5%. So yep. You're going to make whoever is going to make 5% a year on 200 or whatever the number is.
That's correct. And so if you, so that's the value over the life of the contract.
Correct.
But the reality is that there are other finance institutions out there that would buy that contract from you today for less than the total return, because they got to make a return on their money, but you can make a return right now. And so what, you know, many of the captives, you know, do is they want to, I tell you, a great example is always like, if you've gotten a mortgage, you know, more than likely you've closed with whatever, and then within 60 days you get a letter in the mail and it's like, hey, we're your new mortgage company.
Mr. Cooper.
Right. All that just happened was that they took that contract that you signed and they sold it to another institution that was willing to pay them a fee that they were comfortable with today to get that cash back in and go do it again.
Okay. I want to walk through the whole example.
Yep.
I don't care how nerdy it is. So if you don't like this, skip
yeah,
on.
I'm like, you're going to get me in the weeds. Though. Yeah.
So like $200,000 truck,
mm-hmm.
Alltech Capital
mm-hmm.
will finance it for 60 months mm-hmm. at 5%. Let's use that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what will they do? They will, in essence, sell that note. Give me a price. Give me something that you've seen before, an example. So who are they going to sell it to?
Yeah.
How much are they going to sell it for? And how does that make Alltech Capital money?
Yeah. So I got to be careful because they're really private.
Sure.
So I don't want to over divulge, but let's just say, you're talking about a couple points per transaction.
Okay.
1-2%,
you know,
kind of deal. It's like, it's not a ton of money when you consider the amount that you're financing. But the fact of the matter is, if you can figure out a system where you do it over and over and over and over again, and you continue to churn out high volume, it's low margin, high volume kind of business.
Mm.
I mean, you can make some decent money and I think Stieslingers would say that Alltech Capital is, a success story. I mean, it's a division of, you know, what they are today. That's, you know, successful. So in the mortgage example, the only difference that I would say in what we do, and even what we do at Battle Horse, is you never get that letter in the mail. So the contract sold, but there's language in the contract that says, hey, we're allowed to blindly assign, you know, this to another finance institution if we choose to. And so we have the right to do that. And so, but we want to retain servicing. We really want to build a business where we're partners with the folks that need financing.
Mm.
And so we do what's called blind assignment. So we're generally speaking, selling all of that paper a month or 2 months. So we close with our own funds, maybe collect a payment or two literally to us. And then we're selling, in that example, 58 payments, you know, to somebody else, some other financial institution that likes, maybe it's the asset class, or they like the credit profile, they like the return on it, like all of those things factor in kind of who you send them to. But it's one of those fun markets where it is an absolute monster. When we're talking about $1 trillion is done in the equipment finance space. But it's actually a pretty small market, especially when you look at what we do as an independent. We're definitely few and far between.
So I remember sitting in Clint's house that night talking to you about this, and mine being a little blown because you were still at Alltech at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decided you left financial planning and so you're doing this. Tell me about the 12 years there at Alltech and like what your progression of what you did there.
Yeah. So I mean, I was hired on at the time, it was just kind of called a middle market sales. So
who are you selling to?
And again, this model is the normal.
Yeah,
kind of model,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's not.
So, I mean, Alltech doesn't have, exactly. Yeah. Alltech doesn't have dealerships. They have a direct sales force. But imagine when you see like a Thompson piece of equipment or a Volvo piece of equipment that's sold through a dealer, everything I'm about to describe is the exact same model.
It's all
at the
same
end of the day.
Model.
Right.
I do. Okay.
So you've got someone who is an expert in the equipment. So you've got an equipment salesperson that's going to an end user that needs it, and they're competing, hey, buy my piece of whatever versus their piece of whatever, right?
Is that what you did?
That person, as soon as the customer says, okay, I want to buy yours, how do I finance it? Well, now they're going to reach out to their Alltech Capital rep, and they're going to say, hey, I don't do financing, I do trucks. Here's Austin Bennett. He can help you walk through the process, get you approved.
I'm a heavy equipment sales guy. I know all about the heavy equipment. I know the buckets holds this much, and it's this long, or whatever.
Right.
Hey, Mr. Customer, you want to buy this? Yes, I want to buy it from you, Thomas. Great. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you to Austin. Austin's going to help you figure out the financing part of this. You going to pay cash? No, no cash? Okay, here.
That's right.
Going to get you to Austin. Austin's going to take care of you. I do that in my business now.
Yeah, so that's...
With Emily and Sierra. Like, yeah. We'll do something. We'll sell something. Hey, Emily's going to take care of me. Hey, Sierra's... Okay, so it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. I mean, and so essentially where you've got maybe, you know, you've got hundreds of salespeople that are out, you know, selling the trucks. Equipment. You have, you know, in the middle market world, which is kind of a, that's more of like a single truck transaction. It's not... large ticket is generally in the millions, you know, it's multiple units. Mm. And when I got hired on, I did middle market. So that's kind of single truck transactions. But I had like 18 to 25 reps in my region of the country, sales reps that are selling equipment that were, you know, I had to go build a relationship with them. I had to gain their trust. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, they're bringing you in and trusting that you're not going to screw up the relationship for somebody that just bought something from them. So it's, I mean, you know, you have to gain their trust. You have to, you know, make sure that they know you, that they trust you and that they want to bring you in. You do good work. But that's it, man. It's almost, you would do outbound calls just to kind of check in with folks and see what's going on in their areas. But a lot of it was inbound. I mean, it was.
So you were taking the sales reps, the people that knew the heavy equipment, mm-hmm. were all tech people.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
But they're spread out. They don't all live in Birmingham.
No, all over the country. I mean, they've got a worldwide division.
Chicago. 100%.
Yeah, my territory, when I got hired in middle market, it was the Northeast. So I was kind of like from the Carolinas, you know, up to Maine. And I was traveling up there all the time.
What were you doing when you were traveling?
So I chose to travel because I feel like I'm better at building relationships in person, sure. than over the phone or whatever. And so I really wanted to know my reps. I wanted them to know me. I felt like that was a path to gain trust. So generally when I was traveling, I would be riding along with them. I mean, they may set a customer meeting that's specific to finance and I'd go in and, you know, and start talking about, you know, our offering. But I mean, the minimum trip was simply, I'm going to hang out with these reps and ride with them and they're going to introduce me to folks. And
you want to be best friends with the reps.
100%.
Because you want them to trust you and know that when they hand Johnny, the guy that bought the heavy equipment, off to you, that you're going to take care of them, because that is their customer and they want Johnny to buy more heavy equipment.
Yeah, I mean, we're all under the same brand.
Okay.
So, you know, if it's like if a customer buys an Altec piece of equipment, has a great experience with the Altec rep, but then has a terrible experience with Altec Capital, then their experience was terrible with Altec. You know what I mean? And it can hurt the deal. So that's what you end up doing. It's just trying to gain trust. Now, to be clear, they introduce you, right, to end users. And then our job is to go and build strong relationships with those end users because they're financing more than just Altec equipment. And so if you get to know the CFO and maybe Altec's 2 million of a 10 million spend every year, man, you want to try to finance the full 10 million. You know what I mean? So then you build relationships with the end user. And now and once you're kind of fully developed, I would say like you're a fully developed territory rep, you're dealing with both. You know, you got calls coming in from end users that need help with whatever the current deal is.
So sometimes
you've got reps coming in.
They'll skip the rep.
If you can gain trust with the rep, and again, it's a process, right? It's not going to happen overnight. It's certainly not going to be like, hey, just send them all to me. If you can gain trust with the rep and they recognize that my life is a whole lot easier if I don't play middleman in the area that I'm not an expert, when you gain that trust, the whole world gets much easier. But you got to gain the trust. The rep has to feel, hey, I can trust this customer, you know, with this person. But at the end of the day, if I do that, I want them to deal directly with Austin. I don't want to have to keep feeling phone calls, calling Austin, and doing the phone tree thing. I'd rather them just go direct.
Just go directly.
Yeah.
Okay, so Johnny in North Carolina buys an Altec truck.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the $200,000 example.
Mm-hmm.
He buys the truck, you help get the financing and help take care of him there. He also has to buy a dump truck.
Yep.
Can he call, I'm talking when you were at Altec.
Yeah.
Can he call you and say, I'm going to go buy a Mack dump truck. It's $400,000.
Absolutely.
Can you help?
Absolutely. No, that's what I'm saying. That's
what I thought.
That's kind of where you know that you've done your job well. When that's what happens, right? You've gone beyond just the financing of the captive, you know, relationship. They're now calling you and talking about other needs that they have outside of the space that they were introduced with you on. But absolutely, and it's, you know, it became a huge part of you know, our business was doing.
You're a banker.
Non-Altec stuff. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to simplify it and dumb it down.
Listen, like I said, you have to define. For me, you got to define banker again. Yes, it's like a bank in the sense that like we have capital, people need capital, we're going to charge a fair rate for the risk tolerance and the equipment, whatever it is. The same way you would go to a bank and you have that same transaction, yes, very similar. But there's no, you know, it's not checking accounts. There's not consumer products.
Correct.
And it's nothing like that.
I understand that there's a very small portion. I mean, this sounds really crazy. There's a small portion that is the teller and the bank and the checking account.
Yep.
That's there's money there.
Yep.
But like the business of banking is
making a return on the capital that you have access to.
Making a return on the capital that Susie and Johnny and Austin and Thomas are giving to the bank.
And I would say that, you know, most equipment finance companies are similar to a bank in that regard.
Except that they don't, like Altec Capital, and I'm just trying to wrap my mind, and tell me where I'm wrong. Altec Capital, and honestly, Battle Horse in a way, you're a bank with no tellers, no customer transactions.
I mean, we're the loan department at the
sure,
bank. How about
that's
that?
Exactly. That's right. Like, that's right.
We're only talking about lending and contracts and, you know, trying to close transactions and get people the cash they need to go do what they ever want to do. Yeah.
Okay. So at Altec, you're that position. How did you progress from there?
Yeah. So again, I was hired at middle market. At some point, I got to transition to
what is middle market?
So again, sorry, and I'm going to use our terminology. Yeah. You got to stop me. It just kind of means you're doing single transactions in the neighborhood of 150 to 250 grand, something like that. And then you're going to get a new customer and you're going to do another one like that. And generally it's for the client that, man, they buy one truck and they use it for 4 years and then they come back and they buy another one. And so you've got a number of those kind of relationships.
Okay.
Got into a large account role, so that's kind of the next step in the sales ladder.
Okay.
And so now you're dealing with larger customers, kind of more sophisticated buyer, I would say. You know, large investor-owned utilities like Alabama Power is an investor-owned utility. Entergy, which, you know, covers four states west of us, is one of the largest utilities in the country. You know, when you start tapping into those opportunities and trying to develop those accounts. So I started in middle market. I went to to large accounts.
Okay.
And then
so instead of selling 250 grand, you're selling 2 million.
In some cases, you know, 20, 30. Okay. Over a year, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're literally putting together a full year's plan for the acquisition, you know, of equipment. And
because they know that in 9 months they're going to buy, they got to buy this much stuff.
100%. Yeah. I mean, if you think about the lead times to literally build these, you know, these monster trucks, I mean, you could know 18 months out, like when the deliveries are coming and, you know, what the turn cycle is. I mean, they're planning that far in advance to stay ahead of their equipment needs.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So you would go into the year, like if you retained the business, if you won the bid, I mean, however you got in there, you would kind of know that as long as deliveries hit, this is what my year looks like in that world. And it was, man, it's a little scarier because it's a kind of all or nothing. Like you normally have just kind of one or two and you better run them really well. Or, I mean, if they go, it's half your business or whatever it is, you know? So, the stakes feel a little bit higher, but, man, had a blast. I did that. At some point in there, they gave me what they called an area manager role. So I was still sales. I still had my accounts, but now I would have like two middle market folks that reported to me. Yep. And so that's kind of my first step into leadership and developing a team and developing people.
How, as a salesperson, how are you paid?
So I want to be careful and respectful.
Give me exact numbers.
But I mean, in general sales, right? A lot of sales positions, there's a fixed income.
Salary.
And then, but the vast majority of kind of what you're chasing is, you know, you got to go kill it to eat
commissions.
It. Yeah. And so they do it, you know, different folks do it differently. So there's bonus structure versus commission. But at the end of the day, it's like, here's what we expect of you and you better do this. And if you do that, you're going to get paid that. I mean, that's just how you make money. And generally speaking, you know, the salary is not the attractive part. You know, that's not what you're grinding for.
It's the upside of, if I can go sell this,
correct,
I can make a lot of money.
Correct. And so, man, I look back, I mean, again, it's like, why do we do Battle Horse? Why is the model at Battle? It is. And again, there's another season of my career that I know we probably need to touch on, but the way that we do what we do, how we treat people, the passion that we have for just, you know, putting an excellent service out there. I mean, all of that is who Altec Capital is. Yeah. I mean, they are just, it is the culture. I mean, the idea of just working in a team environment that's fun, people want to build, want to grow together, like all of that. I mean, I would tell you there's a ton of that just baked into who sure. we are at Battle Horse. But so I, in those, when I got to that large account job, I got to actually spend a whole lot more time with Rob Stowers. So I was helping okay. manage, so the guy that started out at Capital. So I got to
track. Stislingers.
Stislingers
yep. hired Rob to run Altec Capital.
That's correct.
And so he is, in essence, he's not the owner, but he's the
CEO. The managing director. Yeah, yeah. Managing director
CEO,
with his title.
Managing director. Yep. And so you got, as you got these large accounts, you get to hang out with him more.
Yeah, because again, man, like you look at the things that God does to open doors that you can't even sure. explain. It just so happened that my large accounts were ones that they really needed to kind of pull from him. Because, I mean,
he's from Rob.
Yeah, because he started the company, but he did it as most entrepreneurs do. I mean, he's out there grinding and selling and doing his own deals. Oh, yeah.
So he's having to move up to manage people, and you took over some of his stuff.
Correct. But here's the just, I mean, again, just the door that was slung wide open was I mean, I got to travel with him. I got to watch him engage with customers. I got to watch him price deals. I got to watch him negotiate. He would put me on projects that I had no business being on. I mean, it just increased my exposure. And again, it just speaks to the leader that he is and how he's just passionate about developing people. Like, again, you don't know at the time when you're living in it, but right. looking back now, man, it's, you know, it's uncommon. And then Rob exited the business. I can't remember how many years he was there, he kind of went off to retirement and greener pastures and some more fun stuff. And two of the guys that I was kind of under, like, so there was a level between Rob and I, and it was my sales manager, Greg Wheeler. And Greg and then a guy named Trip Griswold got promoted up when Rob okay. left. And Trip is the managing director, Greg's the national sales manager. They're kind of a two-headed monster, sure. like this is my area, that's your area. And man, when that happened, and again, I had no idea this was coming, you know, now we're scaling, you know, our leader has kind of left and now it's on us to like put our mark, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so more doors got open to more like leadership team, you know, development stuff, business development. I've always been in sales. I always had accounts cause I love the deal. I love sure. closing business, but, for sure that kind of and I don't remember, I mean, I was there for 12 years. Maybe that's the last five, yeah. 3 to 5. I'm way more into, you know, managing the numbers and figuring out what we're going to do and making projections and presenting on those kind of things and establishing culture and developing people. Yeah. And, you know, just all of that, it was that part of the time at Altec Capital that did it. And again, it's a testament to Greg and Tripp that they're just they trained under Rob. So they carried a lot of his same approach, but man, they let me fail. They let me screw up, do stupid ideas, make sure. mistakes. I mean, all that and give me another chance. You know what I mean? Just kind of always were like, hey buddy, I believe in you.
Right.
You know, I think you got the good stuff. Let's get back at it. And they were just, they're those kind of people. And they're two of my closest friends now. I mean, I lean on them.
They still Altec.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're still running Altec wow. Capital. It's actually yeah. funny. That's the reason I'm not there. I mean, the ultimate reason why I left was, man, I kind of got on that career path of more responsibility. And I'm one of those that like, I like a new project. Like, give me something fresh. And when I figure out what that is, I get bored really easy to just kind of keep it going. Mm. Like, I like up and to the right, you know?
Yeah.
And so once I started into even just developing in my career, the reality was, again, these are two of my closest friends, Tripp and Greg. But arguably, that's kind of if
you want their job.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen because there's a ton of talented people all around me there.
How much older are they than you?
Yeah, that's the thing. So Greg's like 4 years older than me. So I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like praying that one of my good friends and my boss, who I respect a ton, gets hit by a milk truck, so I can have an opportunity to get the next position.
I don't want to die.
You know what I mean?
Like
that. It just became clear
sure.
that I was going to have to kind of be happy where I was, and I had just started this. Like, I kind of want to go for more. I kind of want to grow and develop, and that is really the only reason. And to be clear, man, in a testament and honor to them, and hopefully your listeners can kind of relate to like this mindset. They did everything they could to make my experience there awesome. They did everything they could to give me new opportunity. That the reality is, though, in that world. As you heard, the finance company is actually just a really, it's a very small piece from a sure. headcount to the to where the really the opportunity is, which is in manufacturing and doing other things with the equipment. And I always wanted to stay in finance. And so, like, even though there was opportunity to potentially move into different areas of the company, I just knew that's not – I wasn't into the equipment as much as I was into the financial negotiation.
The financial part of it.
Mm-hmm. So I started looking outside for a new opportunity when I just realized, like, man, they're doing everything they can, but I think maybe God's calling us to go look and think about whatever's next. And just through relationship, I got connected with a guy in Manhattan in New York. He had an independent equipment finance business. So, again, captive, owned by the manufacturer, only financing the manufacturing equipment. Independent, I'm not tied to a bank. I'm not tied to a manufacturer. I am literally out trying to drum up and negotiate and close my own transactions and then sell them, you know, to a financial institution.
This is On Point Capital.
It is.
Okay, let me go back.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let me go back. This is critical. Tell me about the conversation you had with Tripp and Greg when this came up.
The On Point Capital deal or prior to that?
No, like as you were leaving Alltech, a place you love, you've done nothing but speak honorable, extremely high things the last 20 minutes about those guys.
Yeah.
Tell me about... Because it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're incredibly happy working at the company and the people.
Correct, 100%. Okay.
Tell me about the conversation of I'm fixing to leave.
Yeah, so I think this is obviously just my story, right?
Yeah.
I would tell you, I mean, do I think that Tripp, I don't think Tripp and Greg threw a party that I left, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think they were surprised either because we've been talking for 18 months about, hey, man, I'm feeling a little stirred up to maybe do something more. Is there anything else that you can think of?
So you knew them well enough to have those open conversations.
Again, a testament to their leadership that they had. They created the environment where you can go to them and be really honest about where you are in life.
I want to do more.
And not be afraid that they're going to say, oh, you know, we're going to get rid of this guy because he just came to us and said he just wants to do something else, and now he's probably looking for a job. Like, they just – and that's what I'm saying. They spent 18 months kind of doing whatever they could to try to make the next thing visible and let me see it.
Sure.
And so I think – I mean, I'll never forget just to tell the story. It's like I sent Greg a text that said, hey, man, I need 15 minutes. You know, see you in the office tomorrow. Can I get 15 minutes? And my phone is ringing within like 10 seconds of him, and he's calling me, and I answer the phone, and I didn't know how I was going to say it. I mean, I may get choked up talking about it now. It was the hardest conversation that I've ever had, and I was so thankful for the way he handled it. I answered the phone. He's like, are you leaving? And I said, I am. And that's all I had to say, you know what I mean? And then everything rolled from there. But I didn't have to – I never, like, went in with my letter of 2 weeks' notice. And that was not what the experience was like there. And so – and again, man, it's again, for the listeners out there, it's the way that – just remember that the way that you treat people through their entire experience with you matters.
Yeah.
Because that group could not have been more gracious and supportive and – I mean, we do business with them right now. They're continuing to be supportive. Like we work with Alltech Capital at Battle Horse. So, man, the way that they let me leave, I mean, like, and again, because that was my first place, if that makes sense, like I had bounced around the
first
banks,
real place,
but that's like my first place I'd put down roots. I didn't realize how good I had it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you just kind of take for granted because it's just the world you're in.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, you know what I mean,
how good
I got
were.
It. Yeah. So,
hang on 1 second.
Yeah, go.